Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now the religious liberty case for abortion rights and a new church and state ruling that came down from the Supreme Court this morning. A progressive synagogue, this is the religious liberty argument, congregation Le Dor Va Dor in Palm Beach County, Florida, has filed a complaint against the state of Florida. In Jewish law, the suit holds people are allowed to seek abortions and government bans clash with their beliefs. The complaint filed asks for a religious exemption from such restrictions. The decision this morning, well, of course, after the decisions last week with major implications for healthcare, reproductive rights, and the separation of church and state, among other rights and issues, the Supreme Court this morning sided with a high school football coach who had been barred by his public school district from praying on the field after games. The opinion delivered by Neil Gorsuch says the Bremerton, Washington School District violated Coach Joseph Kennedy's rights to free speech and free exercise of religion by forbidding him to pray on the 50-yard line. It was a 6-3 ruling with three usual liberal judges dissenting. So we'll get into both things now with Micah Schwartzman, professor and the director of the Karsh Center for Law and Democracy at the University of Virginia School of Law. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning, Professor Schwartzman. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, your questions or comments on either of these two cases, welcome at 212-433-WNYC. That's on the religious liberty case for abortion rights and also this football coach praying on the 50-yard line while employed by the public school district at the end of every game. 212-433-9692 or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Tell us more about Kennedy versus Bremerton School District. What was the case and how did they rule?
The case was about a football coach in Bremerton, Washington, who was fired from his job because he refused to follow the school district's policy, which forbids school officials from engaging in public prayer and encouraging their students to participate in it. The facts are complicated, and the conservative majority of the Supreme Court disagrees with the dissenters on how to describe them. The majority describes the coach as engaging in private prayer, praying basically for himself, not encouraging students. The dissenters say what he was doing was engaging in school-led public prayer on the 50-yard line during football games. So they've got a factual disagreement, but more importantly, there's a legal one here. And the majority, the conservative majority in the Supreme Court wants to allow more room for prayer in schools.
So there are two cases about separation of church and state as it pertains to schools in the last week. Last week, the court struck down the state of Maine's ban on tuition assistance for religious schools. So taking these two together, what about religion and public schools is different today than it was a week and a half ago?
I think there's a lot different. The Maine case involves tuition assistance from the state to the parents of children who live in school districts that don't have public schools in them. You've got rural jurisdictions or school districts that where Maine isn't offering a public option. And what the court said there is that the state is required to fund religious schools to the extent that it's providing tuition assistance for private schools that are not religious or that are non-sectarian. It also has to provide funding for parents who want to send their kids to religious schools that are sectarian. And that's just a sea change in the law that's happened over the last decade or so. Now, it's not just that states are permitted to fund religious schools. They have to do it if they're providing funding for any private schools. The long and short of this, in conjunction with the decision from this morning, is that we're going to see a lot more public support for religion, both in private schools and in public schools.
And by way of context, a little bit of context from the New York Times today, as recently as the year 2000, The court ruled that organized prayers led by students at high school football games violated the First Amendment's prohibition of government establishment of religion. The delivery of a pre-game prayer has the improper effect of coercing those present to participate in an act of religious worship. Justice John Paul Stevens wrote for the majority in the year 2000, says the New York Times. So that's an example of how much things have changed. If the coach of the team can take a knee at the end of the game and pray, take a knee for a very different reason than Colin Kaepernick took a knee once upon a time at football games. All right, now to the synagogue in Palm Beach County and its lawsuit against the state of Florida having to do with abortion rights. According to the complaint petition, the synagogue noted, quote, in Jewish law, abortion is required if necessary to protect the health, mental, or physical well-being of the woman, or for many other reasons, not permitted under the act. So that's a new law in the state of Florida, I presume. So tell us how the state of Florida is now restricting abortions and what their defense to that religious liberty case might be.
Right, like after the fall of Roe v. Wade, which the Supreme Court overruled last week in Dobbs, many states, including Florida, are enacting quite stringent abortion prohibitions. And this congregation is saying, to the extent that these prohibitions conflict with Jewish law and Jewish understandings of abortion, there ought to be exemptions, religious exemptions, from those prohibitions. The Supreme Court has been very solicitous of religious exemptions in other contexts. It said if there are any secular exceptions to a law that that burdens religion, the state has to grant religious exceptions as well. And this lawsuit is an attempt to test that commitment on the part of the Supreme Court. If you're going to grant religious exemptions to Hobby Lobby when it comes to paying for contraception, or to religious organizations, churches, in the context of COVID regulations, then you ought to seriously consider granting religious exemptions in the abortion context, too. That's what this suit is about.
We have some clergy people calling in. Let me take a couple of calls. Here's Matt, says he's a rabbi in Brooklyn. Matt, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Yeah, actually, I just called in to say the part, too, that earlier, Brian, in the way that you described it, you didn't mention that it's particularly about a requirement. So just the overall idea that that this court wants to protect people's, you know, ability to practice their religion is obviously can't really be taken seriously when Judaism requires, not just permits, but requires us to do this in certain situations that they're now prohibiting.
Well, explain that idea of requirement, because that may strike people as not pro-choice either, if there's a requirement, and if the language in the lawsuit is the same that you use, that it's required in Jewish law if necessary to protect the health, mental, or physical well-being of the woman, those are very broad categories.
Sure, and obviously every rabbi is going to have a bit of a different take on when it meets that level. But yeah, I mean, the overall idea that Judaism isn't exactly a keep your laws off of my body religion. We do have rules that relate to people's bodies, and we do make requirements about it, traditionally speaking. The synagogue, I believe, is a Reform synagogue. I'm not a Reform rabbi, so I don't want to speak with too much authority about their movement, but it's required. The life of a woman is the life or of the person carrying the fetus is the life of a person, and a fetus is not regarded in
secondary
Judaism as a
to that. Matt, thank you very much. And let me go right on to Reverend Kay Carpenter. She says she is in Manhattan. You're on, or is it Carpen? Sorry, did I make up a last syllable to your name, Reverend? You're on WNYC.
Yeah, you kind of did, but that's okay. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say from a point of view of Christianity that there's not a single way of looking at abortion from the point of view of the Christian movement. And I and most of my clergy friends would be very supportive of a woman's right to choose. And my wife and I have contacted Planned Parenthood, and from a place of compassion, offered space in our parsonage, church-owned housing for women who would need to come for abortion care. So I just wanted to offer that perspective.
Reverend Karpin, thank you very much for chiming in. So, Professor Schwartzman, for you as a law professor, this all suggests a larger religious liberty, which is First Amendment, argument to protect abortion rights, that what a state would in effect be doing if it bans abortion is establishing one religion over the others, which you're not supposed to be able to do. Do we have Professor Schwartzman? Did we lose him? All right.
Can you hear me?
Oh, now we have you. Yep.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I think there are two different arguments here. One is about whether an abortion law can be justified on secular grounds without requiring the state to make religious commitments. Some people think that these abortion prohibitions are really justified on the basis of religion, especially a kind of conservative Christianity, and they form a kind of establishment of religion, an imposition of that religious view on everyone else. That's sort of one set of arguments under the Establishment Clause. But a second set of arguments is, look, even if these rules are secular in their justification or their motivation, there's still a question about whether the state has to grant an exemption for people who have religious disagreements with those laws. And the Florida congregation is pursuing, I think, for the most part, that second argument about exemptions. I mean, do state officials have to grant exemptions to these restrictions in the same way that they've had to grant exemptions in lots of other contexts?
So, like, if you have a moral objection to serving in the armed forces, you could get a conscientious objector status during times of a draft. Is it something along those lines?
Yeah, there is a federal law that allows for conscientious objector status for military conscription or for being in the draft. But this would be a First Amendment claim. This would be an argument under the Constitution, under what's called the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, which protects religious liberty. And the idea would be, if I have a religious objection to following these abortion prohibitions, then I ought to be able to get an exemption from them. So, for example, a Jewish woman who is religiously motivated to terminate a pregnancy, and there might be lots of reasons for that, would seek an exemption under the First Amendment, saying that she has a religious liberty under the Constitution not to be subject to those prohibitions.
This could be a very broad loophole, if that's the right word, to the state laws banning most abortions. You know, again, to use the conscientious objector law example from the Vietnam War days, eventually, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the courts held that you didn't have to be objecting on the grounds of an organized official religion that you belong to. It could have been your private moral objection. So if that's the case, if this Palm Beach County Synagogue wins this case, wouldn't that give license to any woman in America to say, I am exempt from my state's abortion restrictions because my personal morality is different?
In the late 1960s, the Supreme Court considered a couple of Vietnam draft protest cases in which it extended conscientious objector status to people who did not have what the court deemed to be orthodox religious beliefs, that is, beliefs in God or in a divine being. Their views were grounded in a kind of broader conception of ethics. And the court said that the federal statute in that case had to be interpreted or construed quite broadly to cover those objectors, even though they didn't have a belief in a supreme being, or at least some of them didn't. So you might think that if the Florida congregation wins, something similar would have to happen. The court would have to take a very broad understanding of the First Amendment. But I will just tell you as a prediction, I don't think that the Florida congregation is going to win that suit. I don't expect to see the Supreme Court grant these exceptions. And even if they did, I can't imagine that they would expand them in the way that your question is worried about.
Why do you think the Palm Beach County Synagogue is going to lose in the first place?
I think they're likely to lose, not because their claims lack merit. I think they do have some merit under the current doctrine, but because I think a conservative Supreme Court is not going to recognize religious exemptions from abortion regulations. They're going to say that those regulations are justified by the state's compelling interest in protecting fetal life, and that that interest overrides any claim for a religious exemption.
But even way before we get to the Supreme Court, you don't think it's going to win in this first round?
This case is coming up in state court. And I can tell you, I don't know enough about the state court in Florida that we'll be reviewing it initially. There are also some procedural questions in this case, setting aside the merits of the exemption claim. There are lots of procedural issues in cases like this about whether the claimants, the congregation here, has standing. I think this case is going to have lots of obstacles, but it won't be the only one. Right? There are going to be other cases like this. I expect to see in the next several years filed along similar lines. So this question will be tested in other courts, not just in Florida. So we'll have a chance to see it worked out.
Well, here's a surprising first-time caller. My colleague, Elliot Forrest, who hosts a classical music show on our sister station, WQXR, part of the New York Public Radio family, is calling in about this. Elliot, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian. What a pleasure to speak to you. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay. And you're not calling to recommend a symphony or a sonata or anything, right?
No, I'm not. I was passionate about this issue only because I learned about the separation of church and state very early in my life in West Texas when the Catholic Church came and taught the Easter story in my fifth grade class, and my mother made sure that never happened again. And then as I marched in the band in high school in West Texas, they were praying to Jesus during the football games, and I asked them to stop, and they did, that they could pray on the way to the game or after the game if they wanted, but during the game at a public school seemed inappropriate to me and my family, and we were able to stop it. So I don't really understand this new ruling and how it regards to separation of church and state.
Elliot, thank you so much. So in our last 30 seconds, Professor, you want to go back to that ruling? It sounds like in Elliot's family's case, they were just being nice. Elliot didn't have to sue them. They were like, yeah, okay, we get it. If this makes you religiously uncomfortable, we won't do it anymore. But what can you say to Elliot in 20, 30 seconds?
Well, I think when Elliot was growing up, the law was very different. And so they might have been that they weren't only being nice, but they were also trying to follow the law once someone had directed their attention to it. And now the law has changed. And now when they'll be asked to do what Elliot's family asked, I think there'll be some pushback, and the schools will, many of them will invite more religious activity, more ceremony, more prayer, that will be divisive and exclusive of religious minorities and non-believers in those schools, sadly.
Well, there you have it. More from the Supreme Court this morning on separation of church and state in schools, and a possible separation of church and state avenue for litigation to protect abortion rights. We thank Micah Schwartzman, professor and director of the Carth Center for Law and Democracy at the University of Virginia School of Law. Thank you so much.